ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. This is the night we've been waiting for. This is the Super Bowl for people like me, who do this political news and issue stuff every day. We get to see who the next president of the United States is going to be. By the end of the night, we should know that. Mr. Ed Martin, how are you?
You're all right, sir.
Man, I tell you, have you been keeping up with all the news today?
Well, no, I work, man, and, you know, the building I work in has got a lot of steel, and the reception's crappy, so, you know, I just work.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, man, it's really fascinating because, you know, I went out and voted this morning. You know, I believe in my constitutional obligation to vote, and it is an obligation. But I tell you, the first thing I noticed when I voted first thing this morning was the heavy turnout at my polling place. I actually went about 9 a.m. Polls opened at 6, and at 9 a.m., we had a wait. I mean, it was about a 15, 20-minute wait at that point, which is highly unusual for the precinct I'm in. We don't generally have that kind of a problem. So I was kind of wanting to know if that was an indication. So I talked to the poll workers, and they told me, two of them have been doing it at this particular precinct for over 30 years. You know, they've been there quite a while, and they told me this is by far the largest turnout they've ever seen, that they've been busy from beginning to end, didn't even have time to go out and smoke a cigarette. So, you know, that was interesting to me. So I started making calls to different people around the local area, different precincts. And I tell you what, this is going to be one heavy turnout. I think if Jefferson County is any indication, it looks like Kentucky is probably on track to have a record-breaking turnout for this election. That's why I was curious if you'd had a chance to even pay attention or make any calls, because this is phenomenal. It seems like finally everybody is fired up to do something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the polling place, it's kind of funny. Where I poll, they're about 200 yards apart. You know, that's where the districts break and stuff. But It's rural, so they set them up where you can.
Right.
I mean, Eastwood Fire Department number 2 was, it was almost a hazard because they had no room and people were trying to back out on the, you know, get out on the Shelbyville Road to where there's a particular bend in the road, and the speed limit is about 55 miles an hour. So I saw that, and I thought, whew, I'm glad I'm at the little bitty auxiliary building, you know, less than a quarter mile of the road, because I'm on a little Eastwood cutoff, and it's like, yeah, there are no cars. Oh, man. But, yeah, the turnout was okay where I was at our little station, and, you know, but the one just up, where the big one was just, it was to the point of being hazardous as far as the cars getting in and out. So
right,
it was impressive. It was impressive.
Well, I'll tell you what, I am very hopeful that we do set a record, because I think ultimately we've got a lot of people who are getting out to vote today that normally don't take the time. So if the precincts I've been able to talk to today, and I've talked to about 12 or 13 of them overall, you know, across the entire city of Louisville, if the precincts that I've talked to today are any indication and the rest of the state follows suit, we will have a record turnout for this election. And I think that speaks volumes. People are sick and tired of what we've been going through, you know, and we do have some choices in this election. I mean, it's not just a presidential race. You know, mainstream has been portraying this as being a squeaker no matter who wins the presidential race. But here in the state of Kentucky, we've got a lot of races up for grabs. I mean, there's a possibility of gaining 10 House seats, which would give the Republicans control in the House. You know, they're not going to lose control in the Senate, so that's going to be a big deal for Kentucky going forward if the Republicans take over the House, is it not?
Yeah. And I think, just as the last elections were pretty good for the Democrats because you had the down-ticket effect of, you know, of David Williams and Reachy Farmer, you know, dragging a lot of Republicans down. I think, you know, there's no other major races. There's no Senate races or anything else. So there is no down ticket except for Barack Obama. And that's just not a, you know, that's just not a real draw in Kentucky. It's a blowout. So I think there's, you know, there's that issue that could be come into play. But I also think, you know, I actually have to disagree with you a little bit because I don't think people are fired up. I think in a lot of cases, and you see it when you talk to people, there's a lot of people out there, they're just pissed off. you know, right. And they're not voting for somebody as they are against somebody. And how many people I've seen and talked to and heard and seen what they post and stuff on Facebook or anywhere, you know, I'm not voting for Barack Obama. I'm voting for him because I hate Barack Obama, or, you know, Mitt's a sellout, or Mitt's this. So I'm voting for Barack Obama. So it's just like, I think it's good people are fired up, and you always want participation because it's embarrassing on sort of a worldwide level when you don't have good participation in the, right. You know, in the country that's got it all. But, you know, I do think there's an undertone to it that's sort of felt all along. It's not really that you're voting for somebody, but you're voting against somebody. So, that's kind of how.
Well, I won't argue with you on that one. I really won't. I mean, you know, it's unfortunately in this election cycle anyway. I mean, that obviously seems to be the point. You know, Mitt Romney is going to pick up Kentucky and Indiana. There's no doubt about that. So he's got these two, and we're two of the earliest states to report. So, you know, he's got these two states locked up. You know, some of the other races. John Yarmuth is in no trouble whatsoever by Brooks Wicker. But it is interesting, though, right now with about 20% reporting, you know, a 67% Yarmuth, 33% Wicker, which is kind of interesting because I didn't expect Wicker to even get that high. So those are the anti-Yarmuth vote there. You know, yeah. You get into the 4th District, you know, that's predictable. 5th District, Hal Rogers, is there's no competition in that particular race. But here's an interesting race. Andy Barr is actually beating Ben Chandler right now in the 6th District by about 3 percentage points. That's going to be one to watch real close for us. Because if you remember, Ben Chandler barely beat Andy Barr in the last election. They ran against each other once before. And Chandler had a problem beating him then. And Chandler has done everything he can to try to kowtow to just about anybody to change his stances everywhere to keep that seat. And it might backfire because Barr's giving him one hell of a run for the money. Of course, you know, there's some things I've got problems with, as always. I mean, that just seems to be usual for me. But in this election already, I mean, one of the things I noticed earlier today, when I started watching some of the CNN pre-election coverage, I guess probably around 2:30 or 3 o'clock, MSNBC and that kind of stuff. And it's fascinating because these guys have already got the maps out. You know, there's been no reporting anywhere because the polls are still open right in the middle of the afternoon. And these guys have already got maps out telling the whole world that Obama is going to win Ohio and Virginia, that Mitt Romney can't make up the ground to pull those off. I mean, they're basically already calling these states before the polls are even closed. And it seems like we had this same situation back in 2008. And what makes that alarming is there were a lot of people after that election that said they didn't bother to vote because they were already under the impression that the race was decided. Now, see, that's one of the problems I've got with these guys on mainstream who sit out there, especially the liberal mainstream who continues to tow the wagon for Obama. You know, they're sitting out there basically trying to make the whole world convinced that these particular battleground states are won. So it suppresses the vote, does it not?
Well, I don't know if it's that or if they just want to be the ones to call it, but you know, it got embarrassing for them with George Bush and the hanging chads down in Florida.
Right.
So, I mean, I hope if they're doing it, and I'm not watching them right now, but I hope if they're doing it, they're at least qualifying the statement, saying our exit polling suggests, you know. But if they're going to go and call it,
well, I mean, they didn't flat out. Well, the thing was,
they could have the reverse effect too. Somebody that maybe wasn't voting. I run out and go, oh, hell, get in line. You know,
right.
It's like, no. So, yeah, I mean, truth be told, look, if you're watching the TV and they're going, no, you know, we're predicting this, and that's enough to do at home, you know what? Stay at home. You're an idiot.
Well, you know, and I'll agree with that to a certain extent. But, I mean, the thing is, though, I mean, what's puzzling about this, they didn't say that they were calling the race. They just said that Obama wins Virginia and Obama wins Ohio. You know, I mean, the implication is for people who really don't pay a lot of attention, I mean, the implication is that these states are already over. So with these states already over, if you're in Virginia or Ohio, you know, and you were going to vote Romney, I mean, you're essentially, I mean, it's that brainwashing effect, if you will. You know, essentially you're saying, okay, well, they've already won then. So there ain't no sense of wasting my time standing in line or any of the other stuff. And that always alarms me because – the mainstream media has gotten to the point in the last couple of elections primarily that it looks like they are basically deciding these races, you know, while the polls are still open, because there are a lot of voters that don't vote. It's nothing more than voter suppression to me. And that really harmful, in my opinion. If you get into the Metro Council races right now, we've got some interesting things going on. Of course, District 12, Rick Blackwell, we expected him to win that one easily, and so far he is. Kelly Downard in 16 doesn't appear to have much of a problem. But the early voting in right now, about 25% in, Metro Council District 14, that was one of the races we talked about we wanted to really watch, because that pits Bob Higlin, who lost to Bob Henderson in that race in the last election. But Henderson retired. He's running again. So he's up against Cindy Fowler, one of Bob Henderson's pet people. And it looks like Higlin right now has the lead by about 10 percentage points. So that's going to be a very interesting one to watch going forward. There's only 20% reporting, and I'm not sure which precincts are in on that. But so far, Higlin seems to have that. And if he does indeed hold on to that, that'll be a pickup of one seat for the Republicans on the Metro Council. So we're going to be watching that one close as well. We've already got all kinds of things going on across the country, voting fraud, Ed. But one of the most interesting to me, of course, Ohio. Everybody's watching Ohio in this election. No Republican has ever won the presidency without winning Ohio. And there's already been a story out today about this experimental software that was discreetly installed on the Ohio voting machines that nobody knew anything about. Supposedly, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio had added some software. It's vote tabulation software. He says that this particular software can't actually be used as part of the process to influence the outcome of the election. It's just a patch that's going to make it easier for the vote counting. However, that is already raising a lot of red flags and throwing off a lot of alarm bells in Ohio. You know, because they want accurate reporting, obviously, for this election, especially for the president. And, you know, the Green Party is already raising a fight over it because this experimental software was supposedly installed. There was nothing there that was tested by government agencies. There was nothing put out that brought it under any scrutiny at all. You know, do you think this is by design? I mean, I know the conspiracy theorist in me wants to say so, but I think this is probably a normal part of business with these guys in this situation. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it's a normal part of yeah, I mean, there's always patches, whether you have an iPhone or computer or anything. There's always a glitch or something to speed it up. You know, and everybody wants to think that, oh, you know, there's something in there that we don't know about. You know, so it must be bad. You know?
Yeah.
Not always. I mean, I don't know how many times our software at work, and we've had to put a patch, you know, a quote-unquote patch, you know, exactly what the hell that is. I don't know, because I don't know computers, but, you know, or how it works or why it happens that way. But, you know, they find bugs every once in a while, and they find glitches, and they go in and put a patch. I mean, the way I look at it is maybe it was necessary, maybe it wasn't. But, you know, can you imagine the stink that would have gone up if it's like, oh, you mean, you know, after the election that somebody would have said, oh, you know, there was a problem and you had the patch to fix it, but you didn't plug it. You didn't put it in, you know, a week before
right.
the election or whatever. Why didn't you do that? You know, I say unless something can be substantiated, it's just business as usual. And somebody said, well, why didn't you do it? And it's like, well, maybe because the voting machines sit in a warehouse, you know, we only bring them out every 2 years, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. What do you want us to do, bring them all out and put the patch in? It's like, no, they were being installed. We put the patch in when we got them out, when they were accessible. Thank you.
Right.
Get over it.
Well, yeah, and that's true. I mean, it's really interesting. I don't know what the deal is with this, but it's interesting because it involves Ohio. Right now, it involves Ohio,
yeah.
and with Ohio is going to be probably the most contentious of any of the so-called swing states, of any of the ones that we're watching. You know, so you really want to make sure Ohio's above board, especially in this election, so we don't have a repeat of the Florida hanging chad if it is that close. And you know, they've set themselves up for that, so that's going to make it interesting going forward, depending on how that election works out in Ohio. And then, of course, in Pennsylvania, you know, we've been talking for a long time. And we've got all kinds of stories out there, credible stories, about these electronic voting machines switching votes to favor Democrats, particularly, you know, Obama and any Democrat running in a close election. Well, in Pennsylvania, they actually removed a voting machine today, according to TechCrunch.com. Yeah, folks, we go everywhere looking for stories for you. How many people have heard of these guys? And they're legit. But according to TechCrunch.com, this was posted a little bit ago, a Pennsylvania voting machine had to be removed because it turns out that every time somebody was voting for President Obama, it's a touchscreen device, it would automatically default to Mitt Romney. So now we've got a machine in Pennsylvania, which the reason this story is so interesting is because it's Pennsylvania. The new Black Panther Party in Philadelphia trying to stifle the vote, you know, trying to keep people from voting if they're not voting for Obama. Well, now all of a sudden Pennsylvania has this electronic machine that's defaulting to Romney. You know, is that another way to try to bring some kind of you know, questionable doubt into the process? I mean, is this by design or what? This is funny to me. Just because.
Oh yeah, you know, and the thing is what little bit I have heard of it today. You know, it doesn't really matter. It's just there are people out there who are saying, oh, you know, I'm voting Mitt, and it switched to Barack. So I mean, the irregularity go both ways.
Right.
So like I said last night, you know, unless somebody runs away with this thing, then. Yeah, the legal challenges are ready. I hope is a matter of just actually having a dog in a fight. You know, you're saying the Green Party is having some problems. You know, has issues with Pat in Ohio. It's like, really? No, you're not going to win. I mean, I'm a libertarian, and I can accept that. But you're not going to win. It's just look, if there's a problem with it, let the Republicans spend their money on it. Don't do their heavy lifting for them. And, you know, if it's a Democrat or Republican that feels like they got short stick, then fine, and let them go in and do the lawsuits. You know, don't draw attention to yourself. It's just whatever. But we shall see. I mean, you know, the lawyers are at the ready. Both sides are at the ready for in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Florida, New Jersey, New York.
Now he's asking a question. Oh, they are. Mayo was in the chat room asking a question, and the question basically is, why do the polls close so early in Kentucky and Indiana? And quite honestly, I wish I had a good answer for you, Mayo. Really, truthfully, you know, our polls are always open from 6 to 6. You know, that's the way it's set up. They could change the law if they wanted to and allow it to be open later. And I've often asked that question myself, and I'll tell you why. Because in the primary process, by the time Kentucky gets around to voting in a primary – you know, essentially, it's meaningless on a national level. Because by the time Kentucky votes in the primary in May, the presidential candidates are pretty much decided. You know, we don't really have much say in the process. So when you look at this, too, our election polls close at 6 o'clock. Kentucky and Indiana are the first two full states to report in the election.
Yeah.
So we really have no... say so in the outcome. In short, I guess what I'm saying is we're meaningless in the entire equation on a national level. I would like to see the polls open later. I would like to see our primary either moved up or moved way back. If we're not going to have any impact on national level, then let's move the primaries way back to August or September, you know, so that we don't have to deal with a long general either. So, you know, there's a lot of questions there, but what are we going to have to do to make Kentucky an impact, Ed, in any situation?
You need a lot more people. I mean, to a degree, you know, I understand. It's like people say, "Well, Kentucky, we want to be a player," and you know, I say, "Look, that's fine. If you want to get in on Super Tuesday or something like that, again, you're going to Kentucky because of population and the amount of electors or whatever that the amount of votes. You're going to be small. It's a small state. There's a couple million votes involved. I mean, I'm sorry, but." If you get in there with Georgia and the city of Atlanta alone, Fulton County is going to best this, you know, our state as far as delegates or whatever go.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, some degree. Now, as far as the early closing, it is kind of fun. I mean, actually, you know, on the national map, we do get noticed. We don't get lumped in with everybody else. Kentucky and Indiana are always the first, you know. It seems like that. As far as the closing times, you know, I've said that numerous times. Whether it has to do with voter registration, whether it has to do with ballot access or anything like that. These are holdovers from the old days, you know, back in the you think of it back in the day when they had to close the polls, and then the reason they had to do it is because they had to tabulate everything, and they had to have somebody get in a car with a sheriff's deputy and scuttlebutt their ass down, you know, to 6th and Jefferson or something, and get this stuff counted, you know, and then try and get it ready for the 11 o'clock news. It's not the case anymore. You know, I think they could back it up a little bit because it's all reported electronically, you know, clicks, and you're done. It's not like the old days. So, again, just a holdover from a bygone era where you know, from Eastwood to PRP, they had to get those votes into town. So that's all it is, I'm sure.
Well, I would like to see us have more impact than we do, and there's all kinds of ways to do it. But you know, really in Kentucky, the only thing they really worry about is local and state. I mean, they don't care about the national elections, which is kind of sad because that's one reason we don't get. I mean, you know, Obama and Romney, you know, spent billions on this election, and we really didn't get much of that as far as, you know, commercial ads or any kind of revenue coming into the state, you know, on that election, because they have nothing to campaign here for. They don't even come in and campaign because there's nothing to campaign for. You know, we are meaningless in that equation. So I'd like to find a way to make that a little bit better. By the way, you're going to love this, Ed. I'm looking at the Kentucky Board of Election live results, right? They updated at 7:21. It's about 3 minutes ago. And at 3 minutes ago, they actually had Barack Obama in the lead. Now, there's only 2.5% of the counties reporting, but, you know, it's kind of funny. They've got Obama in the lead by about 0.4%. And yet, when you switch over to other live coverage, and I've got to give WLKY some props for this, because their live coverage online, they've got a link there you can get, and they're playing everything constantly live. They're doing an excellent job getting that information out there. But, you know, they're showing at least three times the amount of votes that the Kentucky Board of Election is showing, and they're showing Romney with a lead of 60-39% over Obama. Gary Johnson is coming in about 1%. And Jill Stein of the Green Party and Terry Randall, the independent, or Randall Terry, I should say, you know, they're coming out about 0.5% apiece. So it's pretty interesting watching the difference between our own Kentucky, our Commonwealth Board of Elections. These guys are getting their information from other places, and they're more accurate, more updated. How bad and pathetic is that, that our own Board of Elections can't give us live, real-time, up-to-date information?
Yeah, I have, you know, yeah. And you said that, and I just switched over with the volume off to 32. It's like, damn, they are good.
Oh, they're dynamite. They're dynamite. You know, and I'll tell you, I've got to be honest with you, I'm kind of prejudiced when it comes to WLKY. When it comes to news, I'm Wave 3. I'm part of the Wave 3 editorial board. I believe in what Ken Salvaghi is doing out at Wave 3, trying to turn that station into credibility. And he's done a fantastic job, and Wave 3, I think, is the upswing in news. However, when it comes to election coverage, every station seems to have a shortfall in one area or another. Wave 3 doesn't really, for me, stand up to the quality and the standards that I want in live election coverage. In 2006, I ran for mayor, and I was in a WLKY debate that was televised with Kelly Downer and Jerry Abramson, a debate I won, by the way. According to everybody, it's not me being egotistical, but, you know, interestingly enough, WLKY back then was already starting to set the standard for coverage, and I think they've taken it to the next level, because this live feed that they're showing online at WLKY.com is fantastic. So these guys deserve some props for their coverage on this. They really, really do. You know, so anyway, so we're getting back to this, and I'm also getting some information from Mayo, where he was actually given the wrong ballot. If any of you guys were given the wrong ballot at your polling place today, give us a call. Let us know. 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. I'm kind of curious to see what kind of problems we're actually having out there. You know, I've heard some rumors that they were wrong ballots. I've been told that there were people that were caught trying to vote twice already. You know, right here in Louisville. So if you've had a problem at your precinct today where you went to vote, let us know at those numbers, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. We'd love to hear from you. For you guys that are actually listening in the queue, and there's always a dozen of you at least there, don't forget to press that little number 1 on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. We'd love to listen to you too, okay? So it's interesting. we're looking at all of this, and I'm looking at this live coverage. Mike Pence, right now, still early, only 5% reporting, but Mike Pence looks to be gaining a lead over John Gregg for the race for Indiana governor, Ed. I don't think that that's unexpected, do you? I mean, that's pretty much what we expect.
No, not at all. I mean, Pence is real well-funded and real well-known, so not unexpected at all. So.
Okay, so that race we expect to happen that way. This District 14 Metro Council race, I've got to tell you, I'm really watching this close. This is going to be very interesting to see how this works out. This looks like it's going to be a close race, but Higlin is still maintaining a lead at this point. So we'll have to pay attention to that as well. Ed, to continue moving on, what really happens here? I mean, we're going to know in about 2 hours, give or take, maybe two and a half. I think we'll know by at least 9:30 or 10 o'clock at the latest here in Louisville. Who our next president is going to be. Now, today, I was talking to a lot of the so-called experts across this great Commonwealth of Kentucky. And, you know, and I try to be as nonpartisan as I can be with that. And what that means is I'll actually talk to Democrat experts or Republican experts, and I even out the numbers. So if I talk to six people, they're 3-3, okay? And bar none... And this includes the Democrats. There's not that much of a difference. But bar none, the Republican so-called experts I talked to today told me that Mitt Romney is going to win with a minimum of 300 delegates.
Bob Huglin's pulling away a little bit. There you go.
Huh?
Looks like Bob Huglin's pulling away a little bit. So
yeah,
there
it does. That's good. So I'm being told by these guys that the Republicans think that Mitt Romney is going to have at least 300 delegates or better. And on the flip side of that, the Democrat so-called experts I talked to today, two out of the three that I talked to, and I talked to six people, three on each side, two out of the three that I talked to today actually believe Mitt Romney is going to win, that they don't feel that Obama has done enough to win this election, but they feel like it's going to be 275 to 280 for Romney, so it's going to be a lot closer than everybody thinks it'll be for those who believe Romney is going to win. Now, ironically, the third one said that Obama is going to win with at least 310 delegates. So you can see there's a wide range of information here. What happens What happens if Romney wins in a squeaker? What happens going forward?
Well, I've always thought, you know, there's going to be legal challenges. And if, and I've given that opinion before, if Romney wins in a squeaker, I think there's going to be some problems. I think certain heavily polarized, very emotional, you know, and I got to say it, high density areas, you know, the urban areas, the cities, I think there's going to be some problems. I think, you know, I mean, hell, let's be honest. It's the people that set furniture on fire when a basketball team wins or a football team wins or loses. And I think, and I've long thought that the people, the politicians and the media and everything has got everybody so ginned up and so worked up to, you know, I said earlier, to hating the other guy more so than they actually, you know, appreciate their own guy or whatever. I just think you're going to end up with some people that are just, and the thing is, it only takes a couple stupid ones, you know, and the media's going to be there. And not only are the lawyers ready, the media's ready, you know, it's for that one guy who starts drinking after the liquor store's open and going to go out and tear something up. You know, there's going to be a fight. Two guys are going to start screaming at each other, Romney, Obama, and then it's on, you know. So
right.
I think the same potential exists in a squeaker the other way. I think the level of incivility has gotten to almost a dangerous point in the country. So hope I'm wrong, but it wouldn't surprise me terribly.
Well, see, that's actually what I think. If Romney wins this thing in a squeaker, I'm not worried about the court challenges. That's always going to happen. That's just part of the nature of the beast when you get into elections, especially when they're close. I certainly don't want another situation where we're held guessing forever like we had with the Florida and the hanging chads. But when you look at this, though, and bring the whole picture in, I mean, we have already had major reports across the whole country, about – Blacks have said they're going to take to the streets and riot, and there's going to be all kinds of violence if Obama loses. Now, mainstream media refuses to cover those stories. you know, they refuse to cover those stories. Now, whether that's true or not, whether, you know, whether it happens or not, that remains to be seen. But, you know, in the, since we've already got reports like that, that mainstream media refuses to cover, do you really think mainstream media is going to cover it if that actually comes to reality? Do you think that they're going to cover that and say, oh, this is just something new we didn't expect? Or are they just going to ignore it?
Well, they're going to cover it, sure, because as I said before, it's easy. You know, it's like a kitten caught in a pipe. You know, it's like, hey, get a camera, get a crew out there. Somebody's tearing stuff up. You know, get those shaky images. You know, like you're running away or running to it of a car burning in the street or furniture or you know, bottles being thrown, whatever. It's an easy story, and that the media loves an easy story. You know, and then they can just then they have some stock footage. They can just keep running. You know. And then go back after the morning after, and let's find some pissed off people and interview them. That's an easy interview, you know. Just wind them up and let them go. So yeah.
Well, see, I agree with that, because that's what I think ultimately goes on. You know, they've set this stage. I mean, the mainstream media has been complicit in this huge racial divide across the country today. They've done everything they can to make this a racial election. You know, so when it does blow up, whether it's black or white. You know, they're going to do what they can to fuel that fire as well. Just some other quick updates. Kelly Downard, as we expected, is winning his race in a runaway. You know, and I think that's a great one there. Marilyn Parker is going to win her race, which I think ultimately is fantastic. This Ridge Teague or whatever his name is doesn't really impress me at all. Robin Engel looks like he's going to win his election. Brent Ackerson is going to hold on. He's going to win his. Here's the District 2 school board. No surprise here. David Jones with 44%. His nearest challenger has 31. That's not really a surprise, is it?
No. He's got name recognition. He's got money. Of course, now there's a legal challenge against him. They don't, you know, might invalidate him. Like I say, what's an election season in Kentucky without a legal challenge, right?
Well, actually, he should have been invalidated before the race ever started. And that's the truth, because David Jones is an illegal candidate by the qualifications set to run for that race. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And one of the rare times I'll ever do this on air, but I'll give Jake Payne some props for that. He's the one who actually uncovered all of that, put it out there, and let the whole world and showed the KRS statute that proves it. So, you know, you got to give a little credit where it's due. Rick Blackwell is going to win the 12th over Rick Rosenberger quite easily, in my opinion. 68-32% right now, 70% in. You know, this 14th district, man, this is the one that's really getting interesting to me. There's only 24% reporting, but Higlin has got a lead of 57-43. So, yeah, you're right, Ed. It is growing. That's a 14% increase. You know, last time I think we talked about it was 10%. So, That's going to be a pretty good
race.
Although,
amazingly, for whatever reason, Mike Nemes is getting beat pretty bad. So
that's name recognition. That's name recognition.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem with some of the races.
What does a man have to do? But, oh, well.
Mike Nemes is a class act, one of the best people in this state for representative I can think of. And that's the truth. You know, I got to meet Mike Nemes just a couple of years ago, and I've stayed up and followed him and talked with him repeatedly since then, because he's just one of those people who make an impression. But he's running against Denny Butler. Denny Butler is not Denver Butler, nor is he Marianne Butler, but that last name Butler, because he's related to these folks, it's a Democratic machine mafia game. Denny Butler he can't shine my shoes. He's not that smart. Okay? But because his last name is Butler, it's a Democratic mafia name in this state, you know, he's getting that with pure name recognition. He hasn't done anything. But, you know, Mike Nemes is getting beaten. In my opinion, that's why. And I thought, you know, it's just a tragedy. But, you know, truthfully, I'm trying to determine. There's one race that I think a lot of people kind of expected that, didn't they, because of the Butler name? Because you have House races. They need to pick up 10 seats, if I'm not mistaken. I have to double-check the numbers. But I believe it's 10 seats the Republicans have to pick up in the State House to take control. And that's one that it looks like on the surface they're going to lose already. So that now puts them to the point where they're going to have 11 seats. Do you think that's possible?
I don't think they're going to get that many. I don't. I think there's a couple at play, and again, from everything you read and you hear, whether it's it's candidates or, you know, it's some that we know personally and some that we've just had contact with.
Mm-hmm.
The state Republican Party has not, apparently has not allocated the resources really well. I mean, they've left some close races to fend for themselves, and they've thrown some money at some races that they're probably not going to do that well in. So it's like, if you don't get them back, consider a management change. That's about all you can say at that point. It's like, okay, you know, your party is designed to, as I say, they're in the power consolidation and they're in the winning and market share, if you will. And if they're not getting it, time to fall back and regroup, find a different kind of candidate, find a different kind of management, find some more funding or something.
Well, in the 4th District U.S. House race, Tom Massey is leading pretty easily over Bill Atkins, 59-39%. 3rd District, come on. I mean, that's John Yarmuth all the way. Brooks Wicker's not going to get close to that. District 4 School Board, Missy Smith right now is beating Chuck Hathaway. And that's kind of surprising to me. I didn't expect that one. We'll have to see what the final numbers are. There's only 19% reporting. And last I saw in District 7, they should be updating in just a few minutes, but in District 7 on the Jefferson County School Board, Jonathan Roberts was actually running second to Chris Walls. So, you know, that's another one that might be surprising, as the 4th and the 7th District School Board races will surprise me just a little bit if they stay at that. Because I really expected, actually it's Chris Brady. I'm sorry, I said Chris Walls. Chris Brady's got 33%, Jonathan Robertson at 24%. You know, and James Sexton is actually at 24% as well in the District 7 school board race. That's one we're going to watch close too, you know, because that's going to be an interesting race too. Let's try to go to the phone. We've got an unknown caller. Uh-oh. Caller, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
How you doing, Ed? How are you, sir?
Good. What can we do for you, man?
Yeah, I'm just calling up to talk to you about the 2012 elections that happened over there at the moment.
Talk about what? I'm sorry.
The election. So I just want to talk about the elections.
Okay. What's on your mind?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, why is it that every minority in the U.S. votes heavily Democrat?
Well, you know, that's a question everybody asks. And really, truthfully, a lot of us believe, me included, you know, that it just seems to be a Democrat has what we call a handout mentality here. I mean, in my opinion, you know, it used to be the Democrat was a party of giving a hand up versus a handout. But there are so many people that have gotten used to relying on the government to lead them, they've forgotten how to rely on themselves. And unfortunately, here, you know, the minorities typically are poor people as far as a voting bloc is concerned. So, you know, that has a lot to do with it. You kind of don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but it also relates to minorities that aren't actually that destitute financially. I know Jewish Americans vote overwhelmingly Democrat, and I know I'm not so sure about Asians, but particularly Jews, they vote Democrat overwhelmingly, don't they?
I go back a lot to a guy who Barry Goldwater wanted to kick his ass. Was it Jerry Falwell? I think the Republican Party changed a number of years ago when the Moore majority came in, and you kind of noticed a shift back then. I mean, let's face it, the Republicans in the day were actually more civil rights oriented, but then when the religious right decided to, you know, that they could become a bloc of voters themselves, I'm old enough where I think we all may be old enough to remember that that's when you started hearing the crap come out about welfare queens, you know, and you get these pudgy white guys that were up, you know, playing power brokers while getting rich, running mega churches. And, you know, they just went the polarization route, and they took the Republican Party to that end. And, you know, whether you agree with it or not, you know, welfare queens or not or whatever, it's, you know, let's face it, most far and away, most minorities are hardworking people, and you're dealing with hardworking people. But when you have a certain group that the Republicans will not look at and say, shut the hell up, you know, for a minute, if you don't mind, which would be the religious right. And the religious right is looking, going, welfare queens, immorality, you know, it's like this, that, and the other. And they're pointing this finger, and they're kind of doing some generalization. I could see where, you know, people would look at it and go, okay, you know, if you're friends with them and they're looking at me, you know, they're talking indirectly to me and, you know, in generalities about me, then I'm not with you anymore.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, because I was actually in the U.S. For 3 weeks earlier this year, and wherever I went, I just didn't feel relaxed around blacks.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't have that problem. You know, there's a lot of people that say that, and I'm not going to, you know, I don't know where you were at here, obviously. But for me, it's not a matter of being relaxed around black or white. It's a matter of being comfortable with yourself and being relaxed around anybody. You know, there's as many bad white people as there are bad, you know, black people. I mean, that's a wash, if you will.
Statistically, that's not true, though.
That's like saying that most people that are drug dealers are black. You know, the only difference between a black drug dealer and a white drug dealer, at least right here in Kentucky, the only difference between a black drug dealer and a white drug dealer right here in Kentucky is a black drug dealer deals with crack cocaine, a white drug dealer deals with crystal. You know, I mean, it's all a matter. It's still a drug dealer. Scum is scum. And then there's no color. There's no color on that, in my opinion. I've got to go to another phone call. I apologize.
So in Kentucky, do you use a lot of fried chicken in Kentucky?
Do we use a lot of what?
Fried chicken in Kentucky because you're a black population.
I'll let you have that one, man. I got to take another phone call. But, yeah, I personally eat a lot of fried chicken, but only because I love Kentucky Fried Chicken. Let's go to the phones. That was funny. Caller 702, you're on the air.
Hey, this is OP. How's it going?
Good, OP. I just talked to you a second ago. How you doing, my friend? What's on your mind?
I was going to talk about the elections, but that last guy was pretty funny.
I got a kick out of Kentucky. You know, anytime anybody hears you're from Kentucky, they automatically assume you just love fried chicken. I personally do, but that's just me. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
Obviously, the elections are presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both candidates, it's been a close race, you know, but they've been talking about all these sort of points and everything, all these different foreign policy and, you know, the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not seen a single candidate bring up the increasing number of ballot votes.
The increasing number of what? I'm sorry?
Ballot votes. The increasing population of ballot votes.
Ed, did you understand that? I still didn't.
I did not, no.
Okay.
I'm legally hearing impaired.
As far as foreign policy is concerned, I haven't seen either candidate even give out a plan. I mean, that's what I thought you were going with. You know, as far as foreign policy is concerned, I haven't seen either candidate put out a descriptive plan to tell us anything. Mitt Romney says he wants to spend more on defense. The general consensus is that Obama wants to cut back on defense spending. But nobody is telling us what we're going to do with the bases around the world, how we're going to hold military contractors accountable, because all that's part of defense spending, you know, and all that defense spending is part of foreign policy. You know, we don't have a foreign policy, in my opinion, today. We're just flying by the seat of our pants, and neither candidate has been willing to address that. Have you got any comments?
Yeah, and the increasing population of ballot votes and mug kits is
I got to cut him off. I have no clue what he's talking about. Okay, Ed. Anyway, so we get into this whole discussion. You know, I'm sorry, caller, I got to cut you off, but I still can't understand where you're going for with this, and I can't waste too much time. We're going to run out of time. Here's my thing. You know, if we're going to talk about foreign policy, then let's talk about foreign policy. Do you think that we have a foreign policy in place now? Do you see either one of these guys, you know, doing anything substantially different?
I think it's foreign policy, because a lot of times your foreign policy is based on your military positioning. I think, you know, Mitt Romney wants to expand the military more than the military wants to expand the military. So I think it, to some degree, when you do that, when you take almost – some countries are going to view that as a threatening position. I mean, let's face it. We do when China gets their first aircraft carrier, we go, ooh, you know, And when the Russians are selling arms to Syria or something, we go, ooh, you know. So what are the other countries going to think if they see us building up an army? You know, historically, we look back and we see, oh, Germany was arming. And you see these countries arming, you know, Yeah, sure, sure. You and I sit here in Kentucky, and we're going to say, "Oh, well, that's not what we're about." You know, we're not really going to do that. You know, we're just doing it for national defense. And other countries look at it and go, "Sure, you do." you're spending more on your military than the entire rest of the world combined. It's like defense, really? You know, that's pretty. You know, drones are defensive. They're flying over our countries. So I think with Romney, I think it's the stance we take, the position, the way we're perceived, is going to be different. I think Barack Obama, and honestly, I'm disappointed in his foreign policy. It doesn't seem like there really is one. You kind of adjust. And granted, in defense, it's kind of a volatile place right now. You know, you get the Arab Spring. You're still working. You know, Putin's back in, and China is spending money and building their military. Iran closer to a bomb. So, you know, it is a tough, and you do have to be nimble. But it seems like everything we do now is reactionary, and it seems like if Romney gets in, it's not going to be reactionary. It's almost going to take an almost offensive, just, you know, position that I could see making our allies and our would-be enemies very nervous.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me too, because you just mentioned, you know, Iran is closer to having a bomb. That's been a point of contention for quite some time. You know, does Iran have nuclear capability for a nuclear bomb and all that stuff? You know, there's no doubt that they've got the capability, you know, of coming up with one, to spin fuel rods, all the other stuff. But, you know, are they there now? No, I don't think so. However, is it something that we should look at for the future and be prepared for? Yes. So we've got to take action now. But as far as the actual total foreign policy, I'm reminded of one thing. If you remember the original Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm, back in, I think it was 1991, something like that, you know, the big thing then was we wanted to show how great we were with these so-called smart bombs. Do you remember that? And they were showing CNN. That's how Wolf Blitzer came to fame, folks. CNN was broadcasting live the smart bombs and all this stuff going on, and we were going to show everybody how great we were. What they didn't do was tell the whole story about how many of those so-called smart bombs actually missed their target, actually took out civilian populations and things like that. War is hell, folks. That's just the nature of the beast. War is hell. There's no doubt about that. But in that particular situation, you know, it reminded me of the same thing we pulled many years before. You know, the Bay of Pigs and everything else. We have always tried to be smart and act like we had this technological advantage, that we're military, we have this military superiority and all this other stuff. But every time we rely on that technological advantage to prove superiority, we prove where our weaknesses really are. So when you talk about these drones that you mentioned a minute ago, I think when it comes to foreign policy and the war on terror and the other things that we've got to look forward to across the world, I think that that's probably the biggest mistake that Barack Obama is making, if he has any kind of a foreign policy plan. He's becoming dependent and reliant on these drone attacks, this technological advantage. And that's why he wants to cut back defense spending, cut back on military spending, you know, cut back on all these other things. But that there's no technological advantage to that. When your technology is flawed, you know, every war is won on the ground with troops, hand-to-hand combat, grenades, gunfire, you name it, tanks, whatever. Every war is won on the ground. It's not won from the air. And I think that that's probably the biggest flaw in the thinking of Obama as far as foreign policy is concerned. What do you think about that statement?
I think it's also a flaw that you know, drones are viewed as sanitary. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. sanitary and precise. And, you know, they might be from our end, but from the receiving end, you know, they're sitting around doing whatever, and a little missile comes in and blows up a house, and, you know, maybe gets your target but kills a few kids. Make no mistake, they know where it came from. You know, they know the Russians aren't zipping little football-sized missiles at them and stuff. They know when stuff blows up, and, you know, and everybody sees a little trail, contrail, you know, it was us. So,
right.
I mean, it's, so I think sometimes we get this perception that, yeah, oh, well, drones, you know, we're sitting here, we're guiding it from remote, get a grainy little picture, and we push the trigger, and it's clean. And they go, it's precise. It's like, well, yeah, boy, something blows up. It's not precise.
Yeah, no.
There's shrapnel, there's secondary explosions.
Right.
There's a, you know, I don't think you're waiting for all the kids to get out of the way. And like I said, it's not clean. And even if it was a clean kill, it's still, you know, you got an entire population of a country walking around looking up all the time. It's like, are those Americans, you know, am I standing near where one of those Americans are going to hit us again?
Well, yeah, and that's the big thing for me. I don't like this reliance like that. I mean, the one thing I like about Romney, no, he hasn't given us details on foreign policy either, but he has made it very clear that he's not going to cut defense spending. And cutting defense spending means you're also going to cut the military budget. We don't need less troops. I'll tell you honestly, folks, I was active duty from 1983 to 1987. And during that time is when they came out with the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act. You guys can look that up. And what the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act was, it was an act that was designed to downsize the military. And at that point in time, I was totally against the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act, and I was against the tenets of what that was going to do. Because I knew that when they started using less military people, less soldiers on the ground, if you will, that we were going to make ourselves vulnerable in real-world cases. And I think when we look at what we've been going through since this Iraq war and Afghanistan war, I think that's been proven true. We cannot seem to find a way to get enough troops where they need to be, and we're losing people left and right. We still have people dying every day. And that started with Graham-Rudman-Hollings. I can't imagine a time where we need to decrease the size of our military force even further. Now, with that said, I've been on record as saying that I agree with Ron Paul in a lot of cases, and I stand by that. I do not think that we need to have as many bases around the world as we do, that we can bring those soldiers home. We don't need to get rid of their jobs, but the true national defense means we're going to protect our borders. And while we've got all our soldiers spread out across the world, our borders are insecure. Anybody who tells you difference, lying to you. The only reason America doesn't get attacked at will is because we're not like the British. No soldier wants to go slamming in a door when he knows there's going to be a gun on the other side pointing at him. It's going to blow his ass away. America has the right to be armed. Thank God for that, because that's probably the truest, best national defense we have today going. But we can shut down some of these bases around the world. That'll save the money that we think we need to save without getting rid of military members. But those military members could be redeployed right here in the U.S. Go to Arizona. We've talked about that repeatedly, have we not, Ed, about the Arizona mountains?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Arizona mountains are full of Mexican drug cartels. It's so bad that our own government put signs on the road, signs. Not troops, not anybody going to the mountains to get rid of this scum. They put signs on the road telling Americans not to travel down these particular roads, that they were unsafe because of these Mexican drug cartels. Now, we know they're there, obviously. If we can put a sign up telling people they're there, why do we have troops all across the world instead of standing here in the United States and going to Arizona and getting these people out? That's a real war. That's a war right here on American soil that needs to be had. And I just don't get that. And I haven't seen any of the candidates, Romney or Obama, nor did I see anybody in the primaries that were running for election, talk about just that one simple thing. You want a foreign policy? Great. Here's our foreign policy. Defend your damn self. Defend your damn self. It's not our job to be the United Nations police and go around the world policing everybody. We have some obligations. Do we want to protect Israel? Yeah, probably so. You know, do we need to worry about Iran? Yes, we do. Does this mean that we have to go into Afghanistan to protect cocaine? Because that's all we're there for. That's all they've got. You know what I mean? So these are the major things that I have major problems with that we don't really get into. We got a couple of minutes left, Ed. Let's run through a few things. John Yarmuth obviously has won his race against Brooks Wicker. He's making his acceptance speech now. Metro Council districts, man, I tell you what, we're really going to have to watch those close. Step 14 is, it looks like all the incumbents are basically going to keep their seat. Congratulations to Marilyn Parker. She took out the incumbent John Ackerson in a primary, and looks like she's going to keep that seat against Teague Ridge. So she's going to be a new Republican on the council. If Higlin holds on And I say she's going to be a new Republican because John Ackerson wasn't a Republican. He had an R behind his name. He was a Democrat through and through. But then you've got Bob Higlin. He looks like he's got a real good shot at picking up 14. So that ought to be a no-brainer there. We'll pick up at least one seat on the Metro Council. District 3, District 4, that's not going to change on the United States area. Perry Clark and Chris Thieneman are still in a fight. Looks like about 5 or 6 points separating those. Those are the biggies. Obama's going to lose Indiana and Kentucky. From the looks of it, it looks like national news is starting to call. They're already making the call to South Carolina. It's going to go to Romney, which I think we expected that anyway, did we not?
Yeah. I mean, it was, for a long time, they had a governor that was damn near a libertarian, and they still have, I believe, a Republican governor. So it has been a Republican-leaning state, so.
Okay, it has been. So there we go. Denny Butler looks like he's going to pick up District 38 over Mike Nemus. And, man, I really hate to see that because Nemus is a class act. Great guy. He represents everybody. I mean, it's not a party thing. Tom Ryan is going to keep his seat. Joni Jenkins is going to beat Gail Powers quite handily. Larry Clark. Larry Clark's going to beat Brian Simpson again. It looks like 58 to 42, which is almost what it was in the last race they ran, which is exactly what I told Simpson a year ago. That's the anti-Larry Clark vote. That's not a pro-Brian Simpson vote. It's an anti-Clark vote. The people that were still unhappy with Clark in the last election went out and voted the same way this time, but he's going to win that seat and keep it as well. So not many surprises other than a couple of Metro Council races. The school board races we'll have to watch, and we'll report on those tomorrow night. Final thoughts,
yeah.
Ed?
Well, final thoughts. You know, I was just having a little fun watching the Indiana results, and I see the Libertarians are doing pretty well in Indiana. You know, enough that they'll probably get blamed for spoiling it for somebody. So that'll be kind of fun. But you know, we're talking at work today. I had one of my favorite people, actually, my banker, loan mm-hmm. officer, came by, and we're just discussing business. He's good. He does that. And he said, "Oh, did you vote today?" And we said, "Yes, it is." And he said, "Who'd you vote for?" And I said, "Oh, my conscience." That's my answer, by the way.
Right.
I voted my conscience. He says, "Well, what do you think happens if Romney, you know, how do you feel about Romney or Barack winning?" And I says, "I don't care." I said, "You know what? I don't think any of them are going to make a world of difference either way. I'm not impressed either way." I said, "But you know what?" I said, looked at him and says, "We just do what we do. I mean, we survived Bush, we did well." I said, "We have thus far survived 4 years of Obama. We can survive four more years, or I can survive four more years of Romney." I said, "We adapt and we do what we do." You know? I said,
"Yep."
And I think that in the end, that's what people need to calm the hell down at some point and say, "You know what? It's just like I used to say when Wall Street, we need to bail Wall Street out." I said, "Oh, horse crap, you know." we can do some things. And people are like, "Oh, the economy's going to collapse." It's like, no, it's not. It's farmers are going to grow. I had to, you know, because I am a libertarian, I would have, you know, borderline younger
right.
kids. They'd be like preppers. They'd be like, should we start prepping him? What do you think? I said, no, because mechanics are still going to work on cars, oil wells are still going to pump oil because that's what they do. Farmers are still going to farm because that's what they do. I said, don't worry. The real economy is going to go on. And just tell people, just don't sweat it. If Barack gets nominated, you know what? If you live your life on the straight and narrow and you live within your means, you're going to be fine. Same thing goes for Romney. If you stay productive, live within your means. Yeah, try not to screw over it. You know, as long as you're just not to screw people over and you're not a tool and get screwed over, you're going to be all right. So I really hope everybody just calms down. If it's a squeaker, please calm down. You know, stay calm, carry on, go to work. It's all okay.
Well, and for me, I just close with a couple of things real quick, just more results. Chat room, Ava in the chat room is asking about the Angela McCormick Bissig. She's running for a judge seat, 10th district. She's winning right now by 20 points. It looks like she's going to have that quite easily. You know, that's the only race I don't think we've covered. Once again, we're going to have the full listing of all the results tomorrow night right here at 7 o'clock. As usual, we'll be joined with Dale the Truth. So that will be a really interesting show. You know, Dale, the truth has always got something to say. So we're going to have fun.
He's not going to be happy. He's not going to be happy with anybody because Ron Paul is not our president.
Well, I agree. You know, that's the deal. But it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a blast tomorrow night going through this with him, especially when we get into the Maryland Parker race or the 37th state senate race, things like that. Dale's a lot of fun. So you guys tune in tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We'll get those results to you. In the meantime, when you guys look at these results later online, and most of you will, pay attention to the races who were not, you know, not these ones that are contested, but look at how many races were out there that were uncontested. That's what I want to focus on over the next year and towards the next election process. We need to find candidates to run. I don't care if they're independent, libertarian, green, black, yellow, purple party. I don't care what the party affiliation is. But I think it's an insult and a travesty to our Constitution right as Americans to be given a choice for a vote and not have a single candidate run with opposition. That's just crazy to me. We had a lot of those in Louisville that were on the ballot, but they didn't have any competition. There was nobody to run against. And we need to get that corrected. If we're going to start changing the game, then we've got to start focusing on making sure we have people that are game changers. Okay? So check in tomorrow night at 7, folks. We'll be right here with the live results. Mr. Martin, of course, we'll see you next week. For right now, folks, that's it. Pay attention to your local news. Get all your updates. We'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow night. Take care. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
All right. Talk to you, Mr. Springfield.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle